Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Hulley, Mike Gregg, and Emilio Danilo. In this episode, we'll be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Ipswich Town on the road at Portman Road. I look forward to going through this with my Cottage Talk co-host. We also have a few other topics we will be discussing during the show. Looks like two of my co-hosts are on the line with me, so I'm going to bring on number one, and that would be, I believe, Mr. Hulley. How you doing?
Hello, Russ. Good to be back again. Looking forward to doing the show with you and Mike and Emilio.
Listen, it should be a lot of fun, David. I look forward to going through this. You know, we're going to be previewing the match, but we also have some interesting things to discuss as well. And it's always great when we can do the show with great people. We always have great people, and it should be fun to do tonight, my friend. I look forward to it. Let me bring on my other two co-hosts. Let's bring on Emilio, and then I'll bring Mike on. Mr. Danilo, how you doing?
I'm very good. It's good to be back. It's been a difficult few months, but yeah, I'm slowly regaining life and the values of life. So yeah, unfortunately, it's been a difficult few months. But yeah, I'm glad to be back on the show, share my frustrations and some of my positive thoughts about tomorrow night's game. But yeah, looking forward to catching up with yourself, David and Mike. Hi, David.
Yeah, listen, I'm looking forward to this, Emilio. And I know that it's been difficult. David just said hello, and I know it's been difficult for you, and obviously been difficult for me. And what's great, Emilio, is that we get to do this show and forget about all that for a short period of time, and just talk Fulham. That's what's great about what we do here. We can all we're all a bunch of friends. We're all just talking Fulham. Let me bring on Mike, and we'll get the show going. Mr. Gregg, are you with us?
Hi, Russ. Hi, everyone else and listeners. Yeah, I'm good. Looking forward to the show. Lots to talk about. And, it's good to have, me, Dave and Emilio on, because we have the same views, but we also disagree on, maybe a few of the key people involved.
This should be interesting, guys, because I have some other topics that I'm going to be throwing at you. I'm going to start with this one. And, Mike, I want to get your thoughts on this. Last night, Fulham won the Nickelodeon Family Club of the Year at the Football League Awards. What are your thoughts about them winning this award?
Yeah, I mean it's really good, and the club should make a big thing about it. I mean, you have, when you go to the ground now, you do see a lot more going on with the youngsters. And also, I know the Fulham Foundation do an awful lot, coaching kids throughout London and Surrey and that. And, we also remember that the programme won the Programme of the Year award as well. And so the club are doing some good stuff. And, it's very easy to, mock some of the off-field activities that the club do. But this shows that despite falling into the Championship, they're trying to keep those standards up. And, they should be highly praised for it. And it's a time to do it as well, Russ. I think we've seen that with the price of the season tickets this year and with the extra or the space that we have seating-wise. Yeah, get the kids involved and go out and go to the schools, because they can't go to Chelsea. Who would want to go to QPR? And no one wants to go to Brentford. So, let's get those kids in at a young age.
I totally agree with that, Mike. And when I watched the video, basically their presentation about it and how they're trying to, get families and young fans involved, I think it's been a very good initiative and it continues to grow. And it's a well-deserved award. I'm glad that they won it. And, I think it's a positive thing. And, David, I want to get your thoughts on this.
Well, it would have been better if Mike could have avoided using the C word, but apart from that,
let it go, David.
We've always been known as a family club, Fulham, and this is before we had awards to prove it or to demonstrate it. I mean, it was the reason that my father took me to Fulham and not to the other team in Fulham as a small boy. I think in those days, a lot of people supported both teams. They'd go to one week and one the next. Because my dad was from that kind of area. He grew up not that far away from there anyway. But it was a much more you know, safe place to take children, especially in the 1970s when the other team had a bit of a reputation. So it's a much nicer place to go. And it's always been known as a friendly family club, I think. I don't really think there's ever been an exception to that. Of course, you always have, you know, a few silly people attached to any club, but mostly it's been a few with Fulham. It really has. In the main, you know, we've never been much trouble at all, I think, and everyone respects that. And of course, you know, under the Roy Hodgson's years, when we ran to the final of the Europa League, we was almost everyone's, you know, second favourite team, I think. It's like almost a mini version of Leicester this season. People used to come up to me all the time and seeing if I was in my Fulham colours, wherever I was in the country, and say, oh, what a great season they've had, Fulham, you know, how well they've done, etc. But, you know, it's good that the people that are at Fulham, and I think people like Nicola Woolworth, who we all know, obviously, she does a tremendous job there as customer service, sort of manager, whatever her title is. You know, nothing's too much trouble. She always tries to help. And she was at the forefront of this, and it's full credit to her and the people that she works with behind the scenes as well to help, you know, bring this reward to Fulham. And it's a reward for her, really, and for the club, and for our fans, all of us on the show tonight, who, you know, we all sort of try and pull together in the same direction to, you know, promote Fulham and the virtues of Fulham. It doesn't matter how rubbish we are as a football team sometimes, but, you know, we're all kind of different people from different walks, but we're all, you know, we're a family together, aren't we? That's the thing, and we're
exactly.
A friendly family in the main.
Exactly, and David, you know, I know it's an award for the initiatives that Fulham have put in, and I think it's wonderful, but I look at it as an award big picture, because many clubs talk about being a family. Fulham really are a family. They truly are a family. And, Emilio, I want to get your thoughts on it. We've talked about this a great deal. You know, this award, it's wonderful because it kind of validates everything that I've thought about Fulham. People have said to me, well, is Fulham really a family club? And I tell them that it really is. It's not just about the players. It's not about the coaches. It's not about the people behind the scenes. It's all of them, and it's also the fans. It really is a family. What are your thoughts about the award?
Yeah, I think it's. I'd say after a two or three depressing seasons, it's nice to actually get something to celebrate and to smile about. And to David and Mike's point, you know, we are a family club. Everyone knows that around the country. But it's good that all the hard work that's been invested behind the scenes. You know, we offer cheap tickets throughout the child. You know, family season tickets for if you bring your son or daughter along with you is pretty much next to nothing. You know, there's a lot of, you know, entertainment at halftime. There's a lot of club activities outside of a match day. So it's nice to see that, you know, the club's been recognised for all that good work that's done behind the scenes. Actually on match day as well, before, during and after. But also, I'm thinking of it from another perspective. Commercially, it's quite a very, very good what the club has done. So we still maintain 18,000-19,000 season ticket holders, or, you know, stadium attendance of 19,000 for every home game, which is not bad while we're struggling. But they're obviously now positioning themselves where they want to attract new supporters, get some younger generation coming through to support the club. You know, if we're going to get promoted in the next couple, 2 to 3 years, we're going to hopefully have a stadium capacity of 30,000. We'll attract, again, you can see the financial element here. You know, commercially, it's a good thing to do. We're trying to grab new supporters, attract them to the club, and hopefully they'll be in a position that they've seen a couple good seasons, and hopefully we'll have a 30,000 capacity stadium in 2-3 years' time when all these young supporters can watch us play the Manchester United again. So again, good things positively on the pitch, behind the scenes, but also the thing of the commercial impact as well, you know, 2-3 years down the line.
Okay, very good there, Emil. Very good talk. You know, I wanted to start the show really honing in about this award, and I was thinking about the word family and the fact that they got this award. I just want to mention this because I did a service for my father last night. My father passed away. And there's a card. When everyone came in, they were looking at the cards, and I pointed out the card. The card was a condolence card from Fulham Football Club. And everyone's like, well, who does that? And I said, well, Fulham Football Club do that because they are a true family. And they're including me in that, which is amazing. So when I saw this award, and then I was going through the service, and I was just thinking, man, I'm glad that I'm part of this family, and they truly deserve this award. All right, guys, let's move on. And, Mike, I'm going to go back over to you. And I want to get your thoughts twofold. First of all, I want to get your thoughts. You were at the match, so I want to know how much of a loss was Rowan Ince, Michael Maddow, and Tom Kearney not being available for the match. But also just want to get your overall thoughts on the match because I haven't had a chance to talk to you about that. So this is more twofold for you. Thoughts on those three not being available, but just the overall, you know, your overall thoughts on there. I finally watched the replay today, and honestly, it actually aggravated me because Fulham actually played well for a good 25 to 30 minutes. It was there for them, and then they get hammered 5-0. So it's a little frustrating. But watching it, and I remember you commenting about this, saying, you know, you need to be there to really understand it. I wasn't there, but I got to watch the replay. I think I understand a little bit more what went on there. So I want to get your take.
Well, I'll start with the view on the game. I mean, yeah, for 25, 30 minutes, we were the better side. People will comment that we had the ball a lot and we didn't really create many chances. But there was a bit more to it than that. It was... you know, we were in there winning the ball off of them and working really hard. And we were, you know, camped in their half for quite a while. And, you know, with them really only breaking away a couple of times. And for a team that was, you know, near the top of the league and at home and the way they played against us at Craven Cottage, I expected a lot more. But, you know, we're taking our good results into this game. And... yeah, we were very happy, and you know, and I certainly was. And the way we were playing, we had the ball, but certainly when it was in the midfield, we were passing it around, you know, quicker. One thing with O'Hara and Parker, and they, you know, together they have faults, but you know, they were getting the ball and giving it, and but we couldn't quite break them down. And then the penalty, which was right in front of me. Yes, he touched him, but it was, you know, he dived as well. And the heads just dropped, and then another goal from a, you know, set piece, and the second half was just car crash TV, really, or
right.
live entertainment if you were sitting there. And it was rounded off just being a miserable, wet, cold, horrible game to be to. Wasn't as bad a performance as Blackburn away, but it's certainly second, I would say, in worst performances of the season. Because they just, the last hour just, yeah, they weren't even in the game at all. And
no, they weren't, Mike. And I asked this on the post-match show because while we're doing the post-match show, about an hour before, I happened to watch Jamie Vardy go down in the box, and he was called for simulation. A player had his hand on him, and he went down. And, Mike, I don't see any difference between the two calls.
No, and that's it. But we know, I mean, it was right in front of us, and I was saying as the action was going on, don't touch him, don't foul him, and because you just know.
I agree with that.
But it's, you know, you give the referee the option to make a decision, then it can go either way. But if you don't touch him, there's no foul. And he was past him, admittedly, but there was still another defender between him and Bettinelli, and it was an acute angle, so there was still a chance that nothing was going to happen. But to be honest, I think that summed up our defence. Yes, in that game, you know, we're going to talk about it a little bit later, maybe. So I'll leave it to them. But yeah, we just lost all shape and will to win and do anything right. And you could have substituted everyone off, you know, and brought another team on, but no one for me came out of that game with any kind of reputation intact. They all had their faults at some stage. So really, yeah, just it could be just one of those games. Yeah, you know, we lost, it was a bad result, but we need to bounce back tomorrow, that's for sure. Yeah,
absolutely, Mike.
At least.
Absolutely, and before I go to the other guys, because I pose this, and we were talking about this, and I don't think this is obviously the reason why they lost, but I'm just curious your thoughts. How much of a loss was Ince, Maddle, and Kearney in this match?
Well, put it this way, we haven't lost the game that Ince has started, so I think that's five games he started. And he has made a difference. He is that player to sit in the middle, break up play, and just let someone else move the ball. Maddell has shown that probably of all the defenders we've got at the club, he's the calmest. and you know, you could argue he's the best defender we've got. And Kenny, you know, we can see what he can offer, and he, you know, losing him, while it has allowed Hyman to come into the team, you know, we've lost Kenny because, you know, he is a decent player at this level, and so you're losing three players there who are key to the team as it stands now, and the replacements or the way the team has had to set up with those guys missing. We just reverted to type, if you like, on Friday. So, you know, I saw a lot of people, you know, today I completely ignored the message boards over the last 2 days, but I read back over a few. But let's remember, Jokanović, two of those players you've mentioned came in January, so they're his players in that sense.
That's
of the
right.
Word. And, you know, so we were stuck with, you know, back four, and, you know, a couple of other players who really probably wouldn't have in his team. And, you know, Stearman absolutely reverted to type. I mean, he's a bag of nerves. And I can see there was an incident in the game where the ball came over his head. He was running, and he stopped almost, looked at the player.
I know what you're talking about, Mike. I remember that. Go ahead.
Yeah, late in the first half, he's running almost directly towards me, so you can see his face. And he looks at the player to the left, pauses almost, and that allows the player to get in front of him. So now I think I can see what happens at corners with him. He's not looking at the ball, or he sees the ball, looks at the player, but the player is quicker in thought or movement, and he ends up being left for dead. And, you know, he looks good at times, but really, we're not going to be anywhere next year if he's still in our back four.
Well, we could talk about that, because that's something that I definitely want to talk about. Talked about on the last show, what defenders should be coming back, and that's a major decision for Slavica Jokanović. He needs defenders. The only one that I think is a shoo-in to come back that they need to sign is Michael Maddle. Beyond that, everything is fair game for me. Emilio, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on this. You know, listen, I don't want to blame three players being out on the match, but I also want to talk about not having them and how that might have changed the game maybe a little bit, maybe a great deal. What are your thoughts of these three players not being available against Brighton and Hove Albion?
Yeah, I think it's Mike covered off a lot of the points, you know, I was going to say. You know, Maddle, I think, probably has been our best defender since the turn of the year. I think, he's fairly calm, composed. He's had a couple of iffy games in recent weeks. But on the whole, comparing him to Stearman and to Byrne, to Hutchinson and all that, I think he's probably our most sort of eloquent defender, if that's the right word to use, the right adjective to use. But again, we miss his assurance and his awareness. Whenever you see him on the pitch, he's always looking around him. He's got good vision, good visibility. He's always looking over his shoulder. You know, he's got that sort of big picture view. So that's what I like about him. He's always got an experienced head on his shoulders. And, you know, it's unfortunate he was missing. But, you know, Stearman, you know, was Wolves' best player of the season last year. He was not player of the season for no reason. He's established at this level. What's gone wrong? I don't understand. You know, listen, I think what we want to cover off later in the show is obviously all these signings that we've made, you know, before the summer last year were all Mike Rigg signings. And again, he went for the safety first option, get established players at this level, get experience, get quality, people who had good seasons last season, like Stearman, and obviously he just failed miserably this year. So it's very disappointing to see, obviously, a demise of, you know, what could have been a potential future captain. I remember with some of the shows we talked about him potentially being a leader. Look, he's completely fallen from grace. So disappointing with Stearman, but, you know, we did miss Maddle, and he's just his calmness and composure on the pitch. Ince, you know, not pretty, but he does a job. He reminds you of a cross between Dixon Atuhu and Papa Bupa Diop from all those years ago. So does a job. He breaks up play. You know, sometimes the ball gets lost amongst his, you know, but on the whole, he does a job. Breaks up play, distracts and disturbs the opposition. But, yeah, I think we missed his presence, physical presence more than anything else. And Kearney's had a fairly good season. Maybe not necessarily been the form player in the last 6 to 8 weeks. He's been sort of a bit up and down. You know, one game very good or one game very average. But overall, he's been one of our better players this season. You know, I predicted him to be our player of the season. And, you know, he won't necessarily win the accolade, but for the first year in a very struggling team, has done very well. So yes, we have missed him as well, but you'd still expect with the players that we had on the pitch on Friday night still to have done a job. And that's what's disappointing. We may have been in the game for the first 25, 30 minutes, like Mike said, but to literally fall from grace, literally, within 5 minutes, concede two goals, effectively game over. But the starting 11 is more than strong enough to have competed at that level. And that's my point. I'm still adamant to this point that our squad on paper is not a bottom six team. It's a top eight. And people may laugh at that because results don't suggest that. But on paper, with the experience that we have, coming through, the goals that we've got, some quality midfield. On paper, that squad is a top eight squad, whether people believe me or not. And something's not quite right there. I can't put my finger on it.
It's interesting, Emil. I'm sorry. Do you want to keep going?
No, that's fine. I was going to say, I still believe, we should be competing. We shouldn't be being smashed 5-0 against a organised Brighton team, but they're not world beaters by any stretch of the imagination. And that's what I can't understand. How can we succumb 5-0 in 60 minutes? We did against Hull City a few years back in the Premier League. You can see the six goals in the second half. It wasn't much better against Brighton on Friday night. So something's not quite right. I can't put my finger on it. And I don't necessarily blame the players per se that they're just not good enough. If they were good enough for other clubs previously, then why aren't they performing for Fulham Football Club?
And that's the point that Giannis made last night, Emil. Before I go to David, I want to touch on this because you brought up something that he was talking about. The players that came in for this particular season, leaders on their other teams. I'm talking more about the defenders. We're talking about Stearman, Ream, and some of these other guys. And for whatever reason, it hasn't. He put it this way. Emilio Yana said, these are good players, but for whatever reason, it's not a good fit for Fulham and not a good fit for them. Can't put your finger on why, but for whatever reason, it hasn't been a good fit, Emilio. Well, what are your thoughts about what Yana said yesterday?
Yeah, I haven't listened to yesterday's show, but it's pretty much what I've just said now. These players don't become bad players overnight. They've won Player of the Season awards at their former clubs. Their defence, Wolves' defence last season was very secure, and Stearman was a key player to make sure that Wolves got a playoff or top eight place last season. So you don't become a bad player overnight, and whether it's just confidence, whether it's tactics, whether it's formation, it just hasn't worked for us this season. Some of these players, then there's been a lot of jiggery pokery they can play. A lot of, like formerly McGaff bingo. Players being played out of positions. 1 minute you're playing a central defence, then you're playing as a fullback, then you're dropped, then you're in a squad. It's topsy-turvy. There's no continuity there. Maybe what Wolves and other clubs had last season is more continuity, less injuries, more stable, no management changes. So these factors contribute to a player's performance as well, so we shouldn't underestimate the impact of all these managerial changes, the delays to get a new coach appointed. Psychologically, that plays on players' minds, and it's various reasons. I don't think there's any one specific reason. There are various reasons why, collectively, as a bunch of players, they haven't performed, but I'm still quite firm on the point that you don't become a bad player overnight. These players have played regularly at this level and been fairly successful, hence Mike Rigg going out and paying whatever he paid to buy these players. So you don't become a bad player overnight, and something's not quite right. But we need a change. He's got the summer to start building a new squad if he's still here in the summer, and let's look forward to next season.
No, I hear you there, my friend. I hear you. Very good discussion. David, I'm going to give you the final word on this topic about these three players, and if you want to chime in on what Emil and I have been talking about, feel free to. But you were pretty vocal on Twitter about the fact that Ince and Mato weren't in, so feel free to share your thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, this is the thing that Emilio was just saying about the squad is, we're in a false position for the squad we have, but I'm not sure we are, because we're just too reliant in certain positions. We don't have any depth at all, not really, not in any position, hardly. We have depth in numbers, but not depth in quality. We have, it sort of demonstrates almost the last few games. We have no one really who can replace Maddle, and he's only here on loan, remember. We have no one who can replace Ince, and he's only here on loan, for starters. God knows where we'd be without McCormack and Dembele, for that matter. And now we talk about the right-back situation. Ashley Richards is supposedly the first choice right back. He's not good enough. He's worked that out. We've had, you know, Stearman there. He's not a right back. We've had, you know, various people there. Obviously, Fredericks we've seen there. He's not really an out-and-out right back either. Left back, we've had the same issues. You know, we had Husband, who was, you know, probably clearly the first choice, but he was a lone player. You know, Garbutt, he's a lone player, and he can't even get in the team half the time. We've got Ream playing there, you know, arguably out of position, you know, maybe not. And it's just every position, you know, it's just we've got people who can play there, supposedly, but no one is really good enough. That's the problem.
Right.
And I think people are kidding themselves about the quality of the squad. You know, you don't become a bad player overnight, as Emilio says, so therefore they must have been bad players anyway, and it's just poor judgment. You know, as you know, and you know, I'm not. I told you so, and I'm right again. But you know, I wasn't particularly struck on Tim Ream from the start, and I've got, you know, nothing against him personally, because I think he's, you know, he's quite a clever footballer. He can play the ball around well. But as a central defender, you know, I just straight away thought he isn't good enough. He's not, you know, dominant enough. He doesn't win enough balls. And as a two, especially alongside someone else who isn't that dominant either. It's just a disaster waiting to happen. You know, as I say, look at this. We have two lone players go missing through injury and through ineligibility the other night. And
right.
You know, our mini revival just grinds to a halt. Tom Kearney, of course, as well. He's been an important player, although, you know, Heinemann, you know, did a good job in one match. But, you know, it's we're paper thin. For a massive squad, we're paper thin. You know, we have three goalkeepers that are under scrutiny. You know, people are even saying Bettinelli's not good enough. That he's a little bit better than Lonergan, but he still doesn't come off his line and claim the ball like we've been talking about. You know, the whole defence, you could literally change a lot of them, really, with the exception, obviously, of Maddell, you know, which we assume we will sign in the summer, but who knows what's going to happen. It's just, you know, I don't think, you know, I've said it before, that the squad is not as good as people think the kid is. You know, table doesn't lie and all that. You know, we're down there for a reason. It's not just about the squad. I appreciate that. I think our position is probably lower due to other factors, you know, the instability, the changing of the coaches. Like Emilio said, you're in the team one week and you're out of the team and you're back in the team in a different position and, you know, in, out, shake it all about, you know, musical chairs, hokey-cokey, whatever. It's kind of, you know, pick a board game, bingo, you name it. You know, we've seen it at Fulham. But, you know, it's all unsettling. But you look at the key team and you pick your best 11. Is there really a suitable replacement, you know, to replace half of these people? You know, even Scott Parker, we've become ever more reliant on him as the season's gone on. Is he going to carry on playing until he's 50, you know, or what? You know, Ross McCormack, where would we be without his goals? Dembele likewise. And so, you know, in certain positions, we are, you know, we're on real thin ice if we lose that player through injury or something, or suspension, or they leave. In other areas, maybe you can cope a little bit better, but there just isn't the strength in depth, I'm afraid. And, you know, I could really, you know, if it's logistically possible, I could see, you know, at least half of the whole squad going, maybe more.
Well, David, it's interesting because I've given this a great deal of thought, and I thought about this over the weekend after this match and then watching the match, and it kills me to say this. I agree with Emilio and Mike that I believe that talent-wise, it's a top-8 team. I do. I agree with that. I believe in that. The issue is something that Giannis said yesterday reigns true, that for whatever reason, these defenders aren't good enough. You've said that they haven't been good enough for a while. For whatever reason, it's just not a good fit. So it kills me to say this, David Holly right again. All right? You happy now? David Holly right again. Okay? Enough of that. I don't want to say it anymore this show. I'm bringing Mike back on because I want to talk about something else. Mike, I'm bringing you back on. And let's move on from this topic. I want to talk about something else. It's a little sensitive, but let's just talk about it briefly. What are your thoughts on the tweets of Jamie O'Hara hours before the full match with Brighton and Hove Albion?
The Russ, can you still hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you, Mike.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I saw the tweets and, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, he shouldn't play in his mindset. I'll be honest, I didn't see anything different, certainly in that first half hour or even for the rest of it, that I would say was affected by him by his mindset and, about his domestic issues. And, if I hadn't known about those tweets, I wouldn't have thought there was anything different about his performance. He did one major tackle where he got booked, but again, I've seen him do those kind of things before. So personally, if the manager, and Jamie decided, yeah, he's fine to play, then, it was the right decision if you're only looking at his mindset. Whether he should play with Parker or whether those two should play together at all, that's another question. But no, I don't think it affected him at all.
Okay, very good there, Mike. I'm going to bring David back on. David, what are your thoughts about the tweets? Again, I'm a father, you're a father, and I understand his frustration. I'm just curious your thoughts on him actually tweeting about it.
Well, I think, it's good that he feels that he wants to give his side of the story, that he's kept quiet about it till now, and he feels he needs to say something. It's difficult to comment too much because he's put himself in that situation, by cheating, basically, as far as we know, and he's lost out on his wife and kids. So some people would say, well, it's tough luck on him. But on the other hand, nothing's black and white. We don't know the ins and outs of the case, what caused these things to happen. Because I was talking to Christina about it, and I said, well, his marriage is a stunning model, and he's cheated on her, and he's not exactly an oil painting or something, himself. It doesn't make any logical sense, So I think it's a lot deeper than this, and it's unfortunate that these things happen, but they do in life. And I think it's fair that, he feels he wants to put his point across. But on the other hand, the timing was awful. Just before a big football match, getting all worked up over these things, I think had I been the manager, I probably wouldn't have played him. I'm not sure. I wasn't at the match. Obviously, Mike was there, and Mike said he seemed to do okay, I believe. But I would have really questioned his mindset because I'm sure, you and me, Russ, especially, we're sensitive guys. If we, God forbid, ever had to go through something like that, could you imagine, being in the right frame of mind to play football, just with like something that on your mind? I don't think I would. I would be red card straight away because the first thing I'd have taken someone out. I know, taken out my frustration on them. I do it every week normally anyway, but just imagine what I'm like in a bad mood. I do it now because I'm too slow usually and I just catch people. But deliberately, I thought it was a bad idea to play him. And to be honest with you, it was probably bad timing from Jamie, but sometimes these things just spill over and you feel you need to get them off your chest. So
sure.
I was very surprised to see all this come out and then see him in the team personally.
Okay. David, the only thing that I would say about him being in the team, again, we don't know if the coaching staff knew about this beforehand. Knew that, we're aware of it. And like you said, it sounds like, this is a complicated thing. And, I didn't want to go too deep into it, but listen, we're all talking about it on Twitter. We're all talking about it on social media. So I thought that we should at least discuss it briefly and just talk about it. It's difficult because it's these two people, it's a family issue, and then he tweets this out. But I thought, since he played, we should at least discuss it. And thank you for sharing your thoughts on that, Emilio. I'm going to bring you on. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but what are your thoughts about the tweets by Jamie O'Hara before the match?
Yeah, then both the guys said some valid points. And again, today, if we're a family club, so the family club isn't always about the fans, the supporters. It's also about looking after the players. So I'm sure the club are acutely aware of all his domestic and personal issues that are going on behind the scenes. So there may be some coincidence that his drop in form the last 3 or 4 months, it might be related to some of these personal issues. And like David said, maybe he just needed to get it off his chest, and the timing wasn't particularly great. But I don't buy the fact that the club weren't aware of his tweet. I think they're aware of the tweet. They've known what he's been going through emotionally and psychologically over the last last few years, and maybe it just spilled over. But he's a strong man. He's a you know, he's an experienced professional. You know, he's gone through worse in his life. He's gone through, you know, played it with Blackpool, was it last season, and, you know, in a struggling team with their best player. So he was arguably our most consistent player for the first 3 months of the year. And to be honest, since the turn of the year, he's been appalling, generally, on the whole. So is that just a dip in form, or has he also had to worry about his domestic issues behind the scenes? It's only now that it's become more transparent because he's put it on Twitter. So, you know, at the end of the day, he's 29, 30 years of age. He's been through worse in his life. And, you know, I'm sure, like Mike said, it didn't really affect his performance on Friday. That was just something he just had to deal with on top of all his football that he's trying to play week in week. But I was actually surprised he actually started the game. You know, that's probably more of a surprise. Not the fact that he posted, started the game irrespective of that tweet. But
yeah. It's, you know, like I said, going back to what David said, this is just a difficult situation. You know, it's a family situation. He felt that he needed to get it out there when he did, and that's, you know, that's his right. And like Mike said, to him, it didn't affect him the way he played, and that's, you know, that's fine. I just, you know, it was hard to see, you know, again, as a fan, you know, and like I said, as a father, I know it's complicated. I know there's two sides to every story. And that's what made it even harder, because I look at it as a father, but there's a lot more to it. Like David, you were saying, there's two sides. But the point is that he actually did this, you know, like I said, a couple hours before the match. So that's why I thought, you know, hey, we should talk about it. We're a family. We talk about the good, bad, and the ugly. We should talk about this. And honestly, I wish Jamie O'Hara the best. I hope everything works out for him. With his family, everything works out. That's the bottom line on all of this. I hope everything works out for him and his family. Okay. All right, Mike, I'm going to bring you back on. All right, Mike, let's now talk about something that I was talking to Giannis and Mike about yesterday. This is shocking to me, because this is actually in Slavice's manager reaction. When I saw this, I was a little shocked, so I want to get your thoughts on this. What are your thoughts on Fulham giving up 11 penalties this season, along with over 30 goals on them over 30 goals scored on them from set pieces? Excuse me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this all goes back to what Emilio was saying and David was saying about the squad. I mean, if you want another special show, Russ, we could probably do one discussing the merits of, you know, pros and cons of this squad. And unfortunately, you know, defensively throughout the season and parts of last season, we just can't defend at set pieces. And, you know, the amount of free headers is embarrassing. And the penalties this year, I mean, you know, you saw the other night a man being touched from behind and going down. Then I can think straight away of Reading and Ambrad doing that stupid push as well. And, you know, I think you can look at this. You know, last year, under Kit, we had very mixed results. There were a lot of games where we let in five goals, four goals. You know, a lot of games for a team in the position we were in. Then he said, oh, you know, I've learnt lessons, I've sorted it out, we're going to be different this year. And then in the first, you know, his last game, he let in five. I think there's another game he let in five or four. You know, so there was this whole... We've had a season and a half where we were letting in goals left, right and centre. And then Jokanović has come in, Gray has come in, and despite the results not going our way, I think everyone who watched the games, be it live or, you know, on the replays, would agree that we did change, we did improve, we had until Friday stopped having these kind of heavy defeats, and we were a lot tighter as a group defensively. But you can look back and see the individual errors that these players are making to give away a goal, to let the man loose at a corner, and all these type of things. And so I agree with Emilio. Yeah, that squad we have should be much, much higher. But I think we all know you could take every defender out, replace them with a new one, probably keep all the midfielders and strikers, and we would improve, absolutely no doubt. You know,
I agree with that.
That is the Achilles heel of the team.
Yeah.
And when you talk about leaders, and Emilio said Ream was, you know, last year there was an argument, lots of fans saying we need to get championship players. We need to get established players. So they went and did that. Were they the right ones? Are they the right ones? At the moment, you'd have to say no. Ream, who I've said is almost shy on the pitch. I don't know if he captained Bolton or has captained the USA, but he wouldn't say boo to a goose when you watch him play on the pitch. As skillful a footballer he is. Stearman, very early on, was losing men at corners. I particularly, as everyone knows, I will always quote Forrest away, where David had to restrain me almost when that third goal went in. There have been good players at other teams, but they come to us, and is it organisation? I'd have to say it's not really, because they have improved. But, you know, is there an argument that maybe the characters of the players isn't good enough? Medel's come in, he's like a Aaron Hughes, quiet, gets on with it. You've got Stearman, who was a captain. You've got Ream, potentially a captain. Maybe you can have an Ambrose, who, you know, he's not shy, is he? And then you have Parker, O'Hara, and everyone else. Maybe, you know, is there an argument that you have too many leaders on a pitch and not enough of the foot soldiers doing the actual work? And
that's a good point.
You know, so
that's actually a very interesting take there, Mike.
So the character of the players comes into question. And defensively, they are all a bag of nerves. You know, Ambrose,
yeah.
His hands are all over the players. Stearman is the same. Whenever they're near a player in the box, you're getting scared that they're going to give away a foul. Fredericks, I'm absolutely convinced now, he isn't. I'm sorry, but if he plays in a back four, the only thing that he gets away with is his pace. As far as I'm concerned, I would never play him in a back four again after the other day. He just can't do it. He cannot defend against players who run at him. You watch the replay again, player getting past him time and time again, then runs into Stearman, and they're both standing there like, you know, cones, just doing nothing. He can't deal with people who run at him. And for a bloke with pace, you know, it's surprising. So wing back only for me with him. Ream offers you nothing going forward, but, you know, there is a place for him possibly to play at left back if you're going to be slightly defensive. I don't think he was that bad the other day, but, you know, he was just average. And so, you know, and then you have Byrne, who's, you know, he's Marmite to people. And I've already mentioned the other two, and Hutchison, you know, he's going anyway. So really the whole defence is at fault. And so it's general marking and concentration, and that's where you see the mistakes. But I'm afraid Friday it was back to what we saw first half of the season and a lot of last season, just total disregard for the game and the jobs that particular players were having. Because I think if you look at all the goals we let at set pieces or corners, those type of things, it's usually a defender who has lost his man. You could, you know, partly, you know, forgive certain other players who come from other positions, but a defender's job is to defend. And if they can't get that right at set piece, then what the hell are they doing on the pitch?
No, Mike, I agree with you. The one situation that really just showed me how bad it had gotten was the second goal. Amorebieta causes a foul 40 yards away, free kick, and free header. And then I can go to the third goal as well, free header again. Why is this happening? Why are they losing their man, like you just said? That, to me, is what really sticks out. It's mistake after mistake, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, there's players out there who are not taking responsibility for their job, and they are just not concentrating or following instructions. Because, Stuart Gray is an experienced coach, stroke manager, and you can see him on the touchline just pulling his hair out sometimes. And so I think the combination of all the managers we've had, even Simons and everything else, you know, the players are not following the instructions. So, you know, the result has to be, the conclusion has to be, that as a group, these players are not good enough. And some of them are certainly not good enough individually.
Mike, I totally agree. Let me bring on David and get his thoughts on this. David, what's your view on this? I know you feel pretty strongly about the defense, so share with me your thoughts about what we've been talking about, what Mike and I have been talking about. What do you make of all of this?
Well, I'd say it's difficult to add much, really. You know, I said already, and I think Mike has kind of said the same thing, that, you know, he has very little faith in some of the players, or most of the players we have there. And, you know, and we're talking about, you know, Stearman and Ream again coming in as our sort of mark signings as new central defenders, and neither of them acquitting themselves well. You know, Fredericks, I didn't see him at Brighton, obviously, but I would rather see Fredericks in a, you know, in a wing back role anyway, because I think that suits him best. But, you know, you can't knock him completely. You know, his pace obviously is forgiving. It gets away with things. You know, that the Cardiff match is an example of that. That fantastic kind of defensive tackle, sliding tackle he made, and then 10 seconds later he was at the other end of the pitch, setting up a goal scoring chance. But, you know, it's like we've said all along, we have all these nearly players. You know, people like, say, Ream, he's a good footballer on the ground, but he's not so good in the air, perhaps. You know, he does seem to be a quiet player. And, you know, Stearman is like a bag of nerves. And, you know, Byrne, he gets caught out with his pace. And Hutchison does the rash things. And, you know, you could sort of look at them all. And we struggle to find a solid defender, bar maybe at the moment Maddle. And,
right.
You know, he had a bit of a tough time against Andre Gray. But then I think so is everyone else in the division, to be honest with you. So we can't hold that against him. And if that's, you know, that's the only sort of bad or worst game he's had, then, you know, we're doing pretty well. But it just, you know, it just begs the question, though. It's this old argument again we had. You know, is it the players? You know, are they good enough? Is it the coaching? You know, is it, you know, the recruitment? So, you know, has Mike Rigg been sourcing these people and not doing his job properly, or has he sourced the right players but they just can't fit in at Fulham, or the, you know, say the coaching, and or the lack of coaching, or the change of coaching? It's impossible to say, isn't it, to absolutely pin it down to where these issues are, because, you know, the logic suggests if these people, you know, these players were successful at other clubs, then why not at Fulham as well? Why not? But I don't know. As I say, I was never struck on Ream or Stearman, particularly from the start. So, you know, my gut instinct is then they weren't as good as perhaps we thought they were. And it was poor coaching or poor scouting or whatever. You know, and
okay.
It happens all the time. I mean,
sure.
You know, look at people that, you know, we've hardly seen what's-his-face. And that's, I'm saying what's-his-face because I've forgotten who he is already. You know, we saw him for 5 minutes, came in on loan, and he's disappeared, and I've forgotten who he was. So, you know, what does that tell you about anything else?
I hear you, David. The one thing that I want to add is that moving forward, when we're talking about players coming in next season, if we have more time, I really would like to talk about this on another show, and definitely really hone in on this. When we're looking towards next season, when we're looking at recruitment, this is huge to me. And then I want to go to Emilio because we really got to start the preview of this match. The one thing that stands out to me, Slavica, if Slavica is your man in charge, if Slavica is your head coach, David, they need to tailor the players to what he needs, meaning that if it's a defender, it has to be a defender that fits what he needs to win. The players coming in have to be for Slavica. I'm a believer that he needs the pieces to fit his pie. And I want to get your thoughts on that because again, I don't know if when Mike Rigg was recruiting, if he had Kit in mind, if these were the players Kit wanted. But I think moving forward, David, the players have to be that come in have to be who Slavica wants.
Yeah, well, this is the other thing as well. We had all these debates when we were searching for a manager, and then suddenly we were searching for a head coach. And, you know, what was their role going to be? Was their role purely to coach the players that were there, or would they have a say in who was coming in? And I think, you know, it is imperative that Slavica has a say in who comes in, because, you know, hopefully he has some sort of idea where we're going wrong. I mean, there was,
sure.
You know, I'm sure you saw mine and all the other sarcastic responses to Ian Abraham's tweet on interviewing Slavisa earlier about the defence hasn't been very good or something, and it's like, tell me something I don't know, and I think everybody, you don't need to be a football expert to realise that our defence isn't very good. You just look at the goals against column, and that tells you enough.
Yep.
And the things we're talking about as well, conceding, from set pieces, giving away ridiculous penalties. I wouldn't mind. I think I'm sure Mike and Namilo agree with me that if you come in and a flying massive challenge from someone and completely upend them and, take them out when they're through on goal and it's a penalty, that's fine. That's one thing. But all these ridiculous, ones, people falling to the floor when, it was just the slightest of brushes. And we haven't done ourselves any favour, like the Stearman one. He's
sure.
Put his hand on him, It was ridiculous. He's obviously been to the George Boyd, school of diving as well. But it's just pathetic. As I say, you get beaten and you go down fighting and you lose a close match 2-1. And you fight to the death, that's one thing. But you give up these ridiculous things and you lose 5-0. It's just, that's a different matter. And, yeah, as Mike said, we haven't seen that, thankfully, until now under Slavisa. But Slavisa has to be involved. He has to be a key part of who he wants to bring in, because he has to have an idea of what system to play. And,
exactly.
Not only what system to play, what his backups are. And if he wants to go with a 3-5-2 but needs to switch to a 4-4-2, he needs to make sure that the players to switch are adequate to do the job, or more than adequate to do the job, not just someone filling in, someone out of
right.
position filling in, just to do to fill a hole. And, we have real problems there, that we're relying on two lone players at the moment in the spine of our team to make us stronger. And, another lone player who doesn't even play for us anymore, who was our best left back, and we still want him back. It's just, there's a lot of work to be done. There really is.
Okay. David, we have to move along because we've been spending a lot of time. It's been great. Honestly, I've enjoyed our conversation. I want to bring Emilio. Emilio, I want to give you the final word on this, talking about the defense giving up all these goals on set pieces, penalties, and also the bigger discussion that I just brought on, if you want to touch on that as well, because I think it's important moving forward that Slavisa builds his own team. He has a tremendous amount of say of the players that come in to fit what he needs to win. So feel free to touch on whatever you like, my friend.
Okay, I think, let's be honest, we've had this problem now for 3 seasons, including the last season, and the season we got relegated from the Premier League. If you actually add the amount of goals in the last 3 seasons collectively, we're probably in the bottom 3 in the country. We had 80-plus goals in the Premier League we conceded that year. Last year, we're not far from that again. So it's a consistent years, but let's just look at what could contribute to the players, and may not necessarily be as good as maybe people think, but how many formation change? 1 minute we're playing 4-4-2, then we're playing a 3-5-2. 1 minute you've got Garbutt on as a fullback, then he's played in midfield. Richards, 1 minute he's playing, next minute it's Fredericks. Fredericks in midfield. It's just constant formation changes and plays. 1 minute you're playing wide, 1 minute you're playing central defence, next minute you're dropped. There's no continuity here, and this has been a common theme for the last 2 seasons. Admittedly, in the Premier League, we had a consistent back four and they just weren't good enough. But here, it's the last 2 seasons, it's chop and change, and stable, strong teams have consistent back fours. Maybe the odd injury here and there, a suspension for a game here and there, but overall, the Burnleys, the Hull Cities, Middlesbroughs, they concede less than a goal a game. Why? Steady back four. They play from the back. Steady, very tight, very few formation changes, steady lineup at the back. That's the difference. We've got so many players. Either 1 minute you're defending, or next minute you're playing in midfield. What's our best back four? If we had nobody seems to know. Kit didn't seem to know that. And the amount of clean sheets we've kept all season tells a sorry story. Yes, I agree with Mike. Slavisa has made ourselves more tighter. We're not getting thumped 4 or 5-0 regularly, but he's only kept one clean sheet in his tenure here, and that was against Charlton Athletic at home. And frankly speaking, that's not good enough. So even a so-called expert, a more capable coach, is struggling to get the best out of so-called average players. It's depressing to see. I know we've got to look forward to next season, but who's to say he's going to be here next season? He only had an 18-month contract. Maybe he wants out as well. Who knows? Now, we're speculating the fact that he's actually going to be here and he's going to be given a summer to buy. He's going to be here or not? Challenge.
Okay.
Maybe he'll have a better opportunity elsewhere. If he does want to remain, he shows a commitment to stay and he gets the support from Rigg, then I'm sure he'll be given the funds to reinforce the squad and play the shape that he wants the club to go forward and play to a certain style. But, he's tried and tested every single play in different positions, and to be honest, nothing's worked. Either to David's point, the players aren't good enough, or simply we're not stable enough as a team. And I think that's a lot to do with it. Players are out of position. 1 minute you've got Muddlenitz, and then you've got Mario Vieta. What's your starting back for week and week? It changes. It's like a bingo.
That's a good point. That's actually a very good point. There has been no stability, and that's what needs to change next season, Emilio. And I think that also goes into everything that's been going wrong. It just has not, especially defensively, there is no stability. And they play nervous, like you said, the guys have been talking about, especially someone like Richard Stearman. Some of these guys are playing nervous. So they got to find the players moving forward that they can build around. All right, before we do our preview, I believe Mike had something he wanted to share. So, Mike, I'll give you the final word there.
Yeah, I just wanted to come back really on what Emilio was saying there about chopping and changing
and the
tactical changes. I've got no problem with a coach who tactical changes. We want to see 3-5-2. Some games are better 4-4-2 or different. The one thing he proves to me is that he's watching, during the game he will make changes and per game he will make changes. I think, the idea about wanting stability and everyone knowing what they're doing in an ideal world, yes. But let's talk about that stability. All these defenders, he's chopped and changed, yes, but you will have noticed that slowly certain players have disappeared. Richards, for one, disappeared. Stearman, he disappeared and has come back. Takanitz, it's out the window now. So a lot of players he's used in a couple of different positions, maybe. And I think he's basically come to the conclusion that none of them are good enough defensively, the defenders. Let's keep with them. And you can also look at injuries or suspensions for sendings off. So he's had to make changes. But Stearman going in at right back, and David's covered it previously, what's Richards going to think? He's meant to be the number one right back. But the fact is, none of us really like him. He's not, So what's stability? is that playing four players for 10 games in a row and they're just not good enough, but it's going to be stable? No, he's been chopping and changing, trying to find an answer. Burn started loads of games in a row. He's now lost his place. And we sort of fell into getting these results and this back four, so he's kept that. But the fact is, any combination of those players really isn't good enough defensively. And so stability is great, but the fact is consistency is also required from some of these players, and they don't have that. And I'm going to pick on Stearman again. has he played two good games in a row? I don't think so. So I just wanted to come back and, back up Jukanovic a little bit on what he was trying to do. But it's a difficult subject.
Sure.
One,
Mike,
I
what
think
are your thoughts about...
will be settled. Yeah,
okay,
go.
Well, before we go into the preview, I want to close because I'm the one that brought this up. What are your thoughts about my belief that Slavica needs to really have serious say in the players coming in next season to decide who stays, who goes? He needs serious say because he needs to build a team that he needs to win. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. He said it in a preview match last week, didn't he, where he said he wants to play tiki-taki type football, keep the ball, possession, stuff like that. Well, he needs players who can trap a ball for a start, pass, move, run, pace. He needs all them. If you don't buy those kind of players during the summer, you can forget it.
Okay, very good. All right. All right, guys, we're going to start our preview. Just put you guys all on hold, and I'm just going to read some information. I'll bring you guys on, and we'll get right into this. We're going to be previewing Ipswich Town, just real quick, I'll tell you right now, they are in eighth. They have 16 victories, 13 draws, 13 losses. They've scored 48. They've given up 48. Goal differential is zero. They are on 61 points. Fulham are currently 20th, 11 victories, 14 draws, 17 losses. They've given up 63. I'm sorry, they scored 63. They've given up 72. They're on a minus 9 goal differential. We're on 47 points. Again, this is from whoscored.com. Their strengths, this is Ipswich Town. Aerial duels, very strong. Attacking down the wings, strong. Creating long shot opportunities and stealing the ball from the opposition, strong. Weaknesses, keeping possession of the ball. Finishing scoring chances, defending against long shots. Defending counterattacks, they're very weak. Style play, control the game in the opposition's half. Play with long balls, definitely long balls. Attack down the right, play the offside trap, non-aggressive. In the last six matches, Ipswich Town have won one win, two losses, and three draws. And that's just give you a little bit of information. Their leading goal scorer is Daryl Murphy, but according to what I've been reading, he is a serious doubt and should be out of this match. He has 10 goals this season. Second leading goal scorer is Brett Pittman. I believe he was a huge factor against Fulham in the first match with 9 goals, and Freddie Sears, who scored against Fulham, has 6 goals. Those are the players to watch. All right, I'm going to bring on Mr. Holly to start. David, what are your thoughts of that information I sent? I didn't realize I was muted
because you missed me laughing then when you said about Daryl Murphy was a serious doubt maybe for the match, obviously. But there was something you said, though, as well. You said something about non-aggressive style.
Yeah.
Are you sure you're reading the right team there? We're talking about a Mick McCarthy team here, remember, Russ?
Yeah, that one I don't believe because they are very aggressive and they are very physical. So that one does not make sense.
Well, yeah, we saw the incident last weekend, wasn't it? If you remember, well, that the match was it last weekend? I don't know. I've forgotten, mate. But my memory is going even worse now. I think it's been a long season. Be glad when it's over. But yeah, no. Again, it didn't really tell us too much that we didn't probably know already. They've had a good season, not as good as they would have hoped, obviously, because earlier in the season. They had a spell for a long time in the top six, and I did tip them to finish in the top six. They're my only one that's not right at the moment, but they've been usurped by Sheffield Wednesday. But it's not completely over for them. So, again, the points... if Brighton were desperate for points on Friday, then Ipswich are going to be desperate for points as well. I think, Daryl Murphy is out. Be a big bonus for us, but they are... normally a pretty robust and fairly quick side and strong side. And, we're going to hopefully have people back that can deal with that because it's going to be another long night for otherwise, I think.
Okay, very good there, David. I should also mention that Luke Farney is supposedly out and, of course, Ben Pringle's out, which is interesting. All right, I'm going to bring Emilio back on the line. Emilio, before I go to you, I'm going to give you a stats breakdown that I did via whoscored.com and share with me what you think about the stats breakdown. Let's start with possession. This is between Fulham and Ipswich Town. Fulham are currently fourth in possession in the league at 52.6. Ipswich Town are 11th with 50%. Shots per game, Fulham are 13th at 12.3. Ipswich Town are 8th at 13.1. Passing success, Fulham are 7th at 75.7. And Ipswich Town are 23rd at 63.5. Aerials 1. Ipswich Town are number one in the league at 28.4 per game. Fulham are 14th at 20.3. Crosses per game, Fulham are 21st with 18. And Ipswich Town are 7th with 22. Long balls, Ipswich Town are first in the league at 99 per game. Fulham are 15th with 83. Short passes, Fulham are 6th with 383 short passes per game. And Ipswich Town are 14th with 322. All right, my friend, what are your thoughts about what I've shared to you about Ipswich Town and Fulham going into this match?
Well, if those stats are to be believed, and the fact that they're number one when it comes to winning, headers, etc., we're going to struggle tomorrow. We saw that against when they came to Craven Cottage before Christmas. They scored within, I think, 9 seconds. They caught us on the break very early on, but they deserved that victory before Christmas. I think we didn't play particularly well, but. Long balls, if they're first with 99 long balls compared to Fulham's 83, it's the signs are going to be quite bleak. They're going to play to our weaknesses. That's natural. And, you know, the fact that they've conceded, what, 48 goals. I think they've got very little to play for. They're 8 points away from a playoff place with only 12 points available. So if they don't win this game and Sheffield Wednesday win theirs, then Ipswich have got no mathematical chance to get into the playoffs. So Sod's law is that obviously they're playing against Fulham, a team who's just got thrashed 5-0 to try to keep their playoff hopes alive. So it's going to be a tight game. I think it'll be a lot tighter than Friday. And that's a very predictable statement from my perspective. But, you know, if you look at those stats, you know, I'm surprised that we're fourth in the division with possession rates of 52.6%. I'm very surprised by that stats, but we're very low down the pecking order when it comes to winning balls in the air and playing long balls, and that's Ipswich's strength. I think we potentially may struggle, but I don't think there'll be many goals in it. It could be a low-scoring game here, maybe a 1-0, 2-1. We could talk about predictions later, but some mixed stats there. I think that's the key thing, but my worry is Ipswich's strengths are Fulham's weaknesses, and that might be the difference tomorrow.
That's a wonderful point. I want to bring Mike on. I want to get his thoughts on Ipswich Town. Mike, obviously you've seen Fulham play Ipswich Town. I just shared a bunch of information with you. What do you make of Ipswich Town going into this match?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's not about playing Ipswich Town. It's playing Mick McCarthy. And he picks his teams to play against us in a certain way. So it's going to be he's going to pick a team to, you know, get straight into us, be physical, be direct, be strong. And as the media said, we struggle at times like that. So, you know, Brighton targeted us on Friday with their corners. You know, every corner they took was aimed at the far post. Every corner, and almost, you know, reached them all the time. And so he will have watched us. So, you know, that's where our weaknesses are. And I agree. I think it will be a tight game. You know, it could be 1-1 or 2-1 either way. It's just going to be a really hard game. It's going to be a battle. And I think he has to reflect that, Jokanović, in the players, especially the midfield that he picks.
Okay, very good, Mike. Who are your key players tomorrow for Fulham? You know, it sounds like contrasting styles. And so who needs to really step up in this match for Fulham to get a result, potentially get a victory?
Well, it'd be interesting, again, to see if Parker plays, but I suppose he will do. Ince, I hope, plays. And whoever the two-stroke three centre-backs that he picks tomorrow, they're the key ones. I think we've got to move away from Dembele and McCormick. You know, they're always important because they're the only one, you know, they're the ones who get the goals. But it's that central area, the centre-backs and the defensive midfield area, they're the key ones for me. So it's reliant on who he picks in those positions, really.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, listen, just for time's sake, we're going to go right into starting 11. And, David, I'm going to go to you. Give me your starting 11 for this match tomorrow.
Oh, you have to put me on the spot, don't you?
Of course I do, David. It wouldn't be a show if I don't put you on the spot.
I'm going around with blinkers on. I didn't manage to see any team news. I did see Jokanović sort of talking about the match, but I didn't see any team news. And obviously I was looking for the key thing for me was, is Maddle going to be back or not? Because that makes a big difference, of course. I think it's a given that Rowan Ince will return. I can't see why that wouldn't happen. Don't know about Kearney either. But I think on the basis that it was a disaster on Friday, I don't know if I'd be ripping it up and starting again or trying to go back to what we had before, really. But I think the givens then for the team would be, obviously, Bettinelli, McCormack and Dembele up front. That's probably the easier ones. And say likely Parker, as Parker came off against Brighton, so he didn't play 90 minutes. So Parker and Ince in central midfield. Then after that, I don't know, I guess Amabieta, of course. But who will be alongside him? Maddle, if fit, of course. If not fit, would he stay with Stearman? I don't know if I would personally, but then, you know, we go under what Emilio was talking about, just changing everything around again. And if Stearman plays there, do we play Fredericks at right back again? not sure. Do we play Garbutt or do we play Ream at left back? I think Maddle will come in if fit. Obviously, Ince will come in if fit. Otherwise, I think it'll be sort of the same players we've seen. I would be more minded to play Fredericks at right back than Stearman, given the choice of the two. Despite what Mike says about, you know, Fredericks not being very good at right back, I don't think Stearman is either. So I would play Fredericks, Maddle, Amabieta, and tough choice. Probably would actually stick with Ream, believe it or not. Midfield-wise, the two I've said in centre midfield, I would stick with when Hyman, especially if Kearney's out. If Kearney's back, I'm not sure. I might still stick with him and leave the two kind of people on the wings to do a bit of creativity. And say up front the two regular suspects, but it all depends on those, you know, if they are fit, Kearney and Ince and Maddle all to play, most certainly.
Okay, so for you it really, really matters about the injuries. We got to see what happens, because there is no team news. I haven't seen anything, David, so that's what makes it a little bit tricky, but I wanted to get your thoughts on who you would go with. All right, Emilio, over to you, and I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11. I got an interesting question for you while you do your starting 11, because David was talking about right back. Would you think about playing Jazz Richards at right back?
Well, funny you could say that, because if you could see my notes here, I've actually got him in my starting 11 tomorrow. And funny enough, not to say I'm a Richards fan. I'm probably the biggest Richards fan of the co-hosts. No, that's actually saying much. But I actually see him starting tomorrow, and he was injured for some games as well. That was my understanding when he wasn't figuring in on the bench or on the starting lineup. But you know, to Mike's point, Fredericks had a very poor game on Friday night against Brighton. I see Richards coming back into customary, you know, fullback position. The assumption that Maddle will start, is fit, he'll obviously start. I assume Amorebieta will play. Then I actually think he'll put Garbutt back in there as well. I think Garbutt, a couple months or so ago against Burnley, he had his best game in a Fulham shirt, and then backwards since then. He made a mistake against Bristol City, and he's been sort of, again, in and out. But I'd like to see him, because I think he likes to come forward a little bit more, but also defensively, you know, he's probably offers a little bit more than Ream. Ream a safer pair of hands, but I'd like to see Garbutt in that position. Midfield, it's anyone's guess, really, to be honest. You know, who's to say we don't have Fredericks playing in midfield? Again, I'm just throwing a suggestion out there.
Sure.
You know, that's where he offers more value, coming forward with his pace. But I see tomorrow's lineup being a bit more defensive, more, you know, packing the midfield. And, you know, I've even got here maybe Dembele even being dropped, not necessarily dropped, but playing a 4-5-1 tomorrow, i.e. not losing the game rather than actually trying to win it. So, again, is he going to pack the midfield, put Ince and Tunnicliffe there? Again, it's an opportunity for these fringe players, you know, to prove that they have a future beyond the summer. But midfield, I'm going to put it out there, Hyman will start, Ince, I think, will start, Tunnicliffe, potentially Fredericks coming in there as well, adding some width. And, you know, likely that he will start with Dembele up front, but who's to say he may just play a 4-5-1? Just throwing it out there as a different suggestion rather than a predictable lineup. So, you know, one day to the next, what formation he's going to play, and he's going to keep experimenting. So, you know, there's various options there, but, you know, I do think, to your question, Russ, will Richard start? I think he will do tomorrow.
Very interesting. That's why I wanted to throw that out there, my friend. All right, Mike, I'm going to give you the final word on the starting 11. I'm curious your thoughts on this. You know, many different ways to go. I wanted to throw out the Richard scenario. I'll also throw out a scenario that basically Emilio was mentioning. Maybe you put Fredericks in the midfield. What are your thoughts on the starting 11? What do you think Solvisa is going to do? Do you think he will try to match up to really, you know, really match up against, you know, you said Mick McCarthy is really who you're playing against. Is he going to try to counter what Mick McCarthy is going to do, or is he just going to do his own thing? I'm curious what starting 11 you would come up with, though.
Okay, so there's two questions there, Russ. Do you want me to pick my 11, or do you want to pick Slavisa's 11?
How about picking Slavisa's 11?
Okay, well, I think he's going to revert back to what he sort of fell into in those three games where we've won. So I think it'll be 4-4-2. And I think if Medel's fit, he will come into the team, and I think he will put Stearman at right back. And so Amo Beretta, and I would still stick with Ream at left back, because, you know, against a McCarthy team, I'd want almost four centre backs, if you like. So I'd go with that. The midfield, I think we haven't really got the wide men. I think Fredericks is better coming on, last half hour, even second half. So I think we're going to see, four basic midfielders, and that's going to be Ince. It's going to probably be Parker, although I would be tempted to not start him. And the other two, I think LVC is going to start a game now, and Hyman, who I think is being given a run to try and blackmail is the wrong word, but offer to show that he would be getting games next year, and please sign a contract here, please. Ince, Parker, LVC and Hyman, and Ross and Dembele up top.
Okay, very good. And Mike, before we move on, I'm glad that you brought up Emerson Hyman, because I was watching the replay. He kind of stood out. Again, it's a 5-0 hammering. But is it me, or is he really starting to improve? He's starting to show more. He's taking more shots, and he's being more assertive. Have you noticing that too?
Yeah, he's certainly. He's not shy anymore, if you like. That's not the wrong adjective to use. But he is. He's taking the game. He's taking control. I think he's been told you are getting these next four or five games to start. Relax about your performance. Show us what you can do, or show whoever what you can do. And that's allowed him to have these runs and these shots. And especially as he's playing out of position as well, being asked to play wide and come in a little bit like Kearney does. But he's shown to me the player I've seen over the last few years. And it also shows to me that, just as we should have done with Roberts, and given him more game time, Hyman should have been given more game time from the beginning of this season. But I think we need a pace, and we need energy. We don't have much pace, but we need energy, and LVC starting and Hyman in the team as well with Ince. And so I would actually go with Tunnicliffe instead of Parker.
Okay, very good.
Young, busy, active midfield.
But it sounds like to me, Mike, your thought process is that it's going to be like you said, four center backs to combat what Mick McCarthy's going to do.
Yeah, pretty much. And then Tunnicliffe and Ince sit in to try and protect that middle as well.
Right. I don't mean. No, I was just saying, you're still going to have your two center backs, but the players playing are really true center backs. So, I actually agree.
Yeah, just across the line there at the back, yeah.
Right. Okay, very good. All right. I will go to you, Mike, first for your prediction. I'll just tell you real quick on the Cotter's Talk Twitter page. We had 116 votes. Loss, 45%. Draw, 27%. Win, 28%. So the majority are predicting a loss. Mike, are you going to be predicting a loss? Are you going to be picking a victory? Or are you going to be predicting a draw? I'm curious your prediction for this match.
I am predicting that I'm going to Ipswich tomorrow to watch us lose 2-1.
Okay. Okay, very good. I'll bring on Mr. Holly. Mr. Holly, what's your prediction?
Oh, I predict we lose as well, of course.
Of course.
It worked for me on Friday, unfortunately. And I think it's going to be a tough game. I'm not sure that we're going to have Medel back. And I think if Medel isn't back, I think it's going to be a tough game even with Ince. So, I tend to agree with what Mike just said, but probably heavier, if anything, more like a 3-1 or a 3-0 even.
Wow, so you're going for I guess you could say another hammering, David.
Not hammering as badly, but I think it could still be a disappointing night.
Okay. All right, Emilio, I'm going to bring you on. What's your prediction, my friend?
I'll do what I normally do. There's the realistic prediction, which is probably a 2-1 defeat. But, on the positive side, I'm probably one of the most positive people around. I can see us bouncing back. You know, our record at Portman Road isn't particularly good over since I can remember in my life. We don't play them that often, but we don't tend to. I can't remember the last time we've actually won at Portman Road. But that'll be an interesting stat to investigate. But, you know, if we do pack the midfield, get some strength, break up play, you know, play, you know, give McCarthy a lesson in effect, you know, and if Mardell starts, then I don't see why we can't potentially come away with a 1-1 draw, but realistically 2-1 defeat. But you know, if we play a tight formation, pack that midfield, you know, play defensive style defenders who are more stronger in defending as opposed to actually offering more than just pure defensive capability, then there's nothing to suggest we can't get away with a draw. And Ipswich aren't playing particularly well. You said that they've only won one of their last six games. Is now a good time to play them, or is it typical of very Fulhamish that we always tend to give the opposition 3 points when they're going through a bad phase? But let's see. Tomorrow, it's the middle of the week. We don't particularly do well. We won at Preston 2 weeks ago against the odds. Why can't we do the same against Ipswich?
Okay, very good. All right, time for my prediction. And I've been going back and forth on this. I was talking to Giannis yesterday and really giving this a good amount of thought before I give my prediction. I just want to mention for Mike, you're going to the match. You will be seeing a 16-year-old be playing for Ipswich Town. According to everything that I'm reading, Andre Dozell will be starting. I guess Mick McCarthy said he will be starting. He actually scored against Sheffield Wednesday, 16-year-old player. So he will be playing for Ipswich Town tomorrow. Guys, everything points just like the last one. I predicted a victory, and I was wrong in the last match. And David was right. Well, I have to go with a Fulham victory. I'm going 2-1, two goals from Ross McCormack. Sorry, David. Going to stick to it because I want to get one step closer to getting those five victories and rubbing it in your face. The rest of the season is about rubbing it in David Howley's face. Two more victories. That's what I need, two more victories. All right. Great show, guys. Mr. Greg, I'll go to you for your final thoughts.
Well, I think it's been a really good show. We've covered a lot of topics, and let's hope that tomorrow we can bounce back. And you know, it can't be any worse than Friday. You know, it really was bad. So yeah, I mean, I still think we'll lose, but there's always a chance. But I'm thinking of a 2 hours plus drive home tomorrow night after the game, having lost 2-1, I'm afraid. So no good news from me at the moment.
Well, I actually hope you're wrong, Mike. I hope you do have some good news driving home. All right, Mr. Holly, final word from you, final thoughts.
Well, you know, perhaps Friday was a little bit of overconfidence. We had a bit of a run. Maybe we went into that game thinking it would be easy, and it was. We've been brought down to earth with a bump, so who knows? Maybe we'll see a reaction, a fight from the players, something we didn't expect. So you never know, something might happen. But I think it's going to be difficult. But I'm not too worried about our predicament overall. But, you know, let's see what happens. And, you know, let's hope that Mike has something to look forward to or to be happy about tomorrow. But I think it's going to be a tough evening for us because Ipswich have got a lot to play for, much more maybe than we have still.
Okay, very good. Emilio, what are your final thoughts?
You know, again, it's, you know, the players will respond. I'm adamant of that. I think we'll get a bounce back. I actually think we'll probably take the lead, and you know, and maybe see whether we can hold on to it is a different matter. But you know, I'm expecting a different lineup, a different attitude. But like today, to Mike's point, we started very brightly at Brighton, and then suddenly just collapsed. So we can just be a little bit more structured, more bold, more strong. You know, I think we will take the lead, and maybe we need to start converting some of these chances, and that's the key thing. We didn't touch on that today, but we're creating a hell of a lot of chances in many games, and we're not necessarily as clinical, despite the fact that we're one of the top scorers in the division. So that's just an interesting fact. We are, you know, maybe either a bit shot shy at times, or maybe a little bit too complacent in front of goal. If we were more clinical, then, you know, we'd be far higher in the division. So let's see. I think they'll get a kick up the backside. They would have got a kick up the backside. I think we'll see a response. It'll be a lot tighter, and you know, hopefully Mike can come away driving home, you know, celebrating a victory or at least a draw. So, but yeah, it's been a good show tonight. It's very constructive. We've covered a lot of topics, and yeah, it was good to be back.
Emilio, it's been great to have you back, and I miss talking to you. I enjoy talking to you.
And I enjoy the fact that we can do this show. I love the fact that I could do this show with you, Mike, and David. I'm lucky to do this show with you. My final thoughts is this. I am fortunate to do Cottage Talk. It really has helped me make so many friends, reach out to so many people, and especially during a tough time that I'm going through, it's been very valuable that I can do this show with you guys. So thank you, thank you, thank you to everyone that listens, to all my co-hosts. Thank you. That's my final thoughts. But, guys, it's time to wrap up the show. For David, Mike, and Emilio, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys. Have a good night.
Boys and girls.